Keulen trecken trocken Geld in die Bank. Die Mädle hoppen Kinder in die Weiberle erkrank. In a jede grüne Hine hat in Stiebe a Telefon. Oi, London hat sich eber gekehrt. Hibberge, kibberge, higgledy-piggledy, hibberish, gibberish. London, London, oi London, hat sich hibberge kalt.
I really like that song. I love the way that it expresses the dilemmas of being a new immigrant in a big city, that bit with the lodger, especially that one where he's, you know, he's climbing out.
Der Mann schläft auf der Erde, the husband sleeps on the floor and the lodger in bed.
Yeah, exactly. The young lodger is climbing out of his landlady's bed just as the husband is walking in the front door. It seems to me it's all about being in a place where women are more independent and making their own decisions about who they sleep with. And of course, the men are quite threatened by that. But it's all turned into a slapstick comedy. And that idea is straight out of the English music hall.
Yeah, I like the way the song uses exaggeration as well. So one line says that every greener, every new immigrant or greenhorn has a telephone at home. I mean, it's daft because telephones were only just invented and no one had a telephone at home. But it does make an important point. And that's really interesting about the comedy. They all make important points. Like back in Eastern Europe, immigrants saw England as a wonderful country full of opportunity. They used to call it die goldene Medina, the golden country. Generally, that's used about America, but it was used about London too, about England. Like anything was possible. But the reality wasn't that anything was possible, and immigrants didn't have a telephone. I mean, they were lucky if they had a job. But Nadia, what you say about mimicking the English music hall, I mean, that's really true because the English music hall parodied all sorts of English music hall songs and American music hall songs. And we'll be looking at that in more detail in another episode.
And are all the words here from the original song?
Well, mostly. I mean, with a bit of adaptation, like the higgledy-piggledy, gibberish, gibberish. I mean, but adding and adapting words to songs that were already there, I mean, that was what the music hall did all the time anyway. And I mean, actually, if you look at the Yiddish language, that's also changing and adapting. So you also heard some English words in it, and you may or may not have picked up our...
Phrase of the week.
Potatoes, anger, fryter, fish.
Potatoes is definitely not a Yiddish word, right?
It isn't, no. The Yiddish word would be bulbas or kartoflen.
And it's not English potatoes, it's Cockney potatoes.
Yeah, like the ones brought in Isaac's Fried Fish Shop in Mile End Road in 1910.
You know, that was the first ever fried fish chain. And of course, immigrant Jews in East London were the first to sell fried fish and potatoes together all the way back in the 1860s.
Oh, and Isaac's Fried Fish Shop was next door to Naroditsky Press. And the Naroditsky Press was a Yiddish press, and there were writers that were living above it, and they even wrote about Isaac's Fried Fish Shop. But interestingly, you know, the language also mixes in the song. So fried is not a Yiddish word. Fried's an English word. It's Yiddishized by putting a g in front of it so that you get gefreiter fish. The Yiddish language like reflects the ways English and Yiddish culture were becoming intertwined.
Paul Kurzweil is a linguistics professor from the University of York and an expert on the ways that English has been influenced by immigrant languages in more recent times. He was one of the first researchers to study English as it's spoken in London now, the kind of English that you'll hear on the streets of London and spoken by UK rappers and grime artists like Stormzy or on TV shows like Top Boy, which is set in the East London borough of Hackney, where many of the actors grew up and where Paul and his colleagues began much of their field research in the early 2000s. I asked Paul what he found.
The research that I've been doing over the last 20 years, along with various collaborators, focused on youth language, something that we came to call MLE, Multicultural London English. Now, these people all speak English fluently, but they speak it in a distinctive way. Multicultural London English has origins in other parts of the world, principally the Caribbean, but also London itself. It's a variety that's used by young people of all ethnic backgrounds. That is basically English. It's Cockney at its heart, but it also has a lot of pronunciation features from the Caribbean, but also from other parts of the world. So instead of saying things like go, a Cockney would say go. People who speak MLE tend to say go. And the same goes for a vowel like the word face. So Cockneys would say face. What we find in London now is face, more of an A type sound.
Obviously, I got the role last year, so and it's been something I can't tell anyone. So in this last year, I've been working out. Like, you know what I'm saying? I've just been, those are the kind of things that have been going through my head. How big is this actually going to be? And stuff like that. How important is this? And then you realise there's nothing else like Top Boy.
Now, as for words, there's a lot of youth language where the words themselves come from the Caribbean or from other languages. A lot of people say wagwan, which means what's going on, how are you? And that comes from Jamaican Creole. But one thing that is used by MLE speakers that doesn't come from the parental generation is the use of the pronoun man, where man can mean I, it can also mean he or she as well. And that's possibly from the Caribbean, but it's developed very strongly in London.
The album that I thought I was going to make and the album that I set out to make, I said, yeah, man's going to make this album. God just said, and you're going down there.
So this is an innovation that is very much entrenched in London now. So that's an example of generational shift with an innovation.
So this is really interesting for us because I think we're thinking on our podcast a lot about generations, about how language changes over generations. And you're talking about the ways that London English shifted and moved as a result of waves of post-war migration. So does Yiddish have a place in this? Where does Yiddish fit into the story of MLE?
Very hard to know. Okay, we can go back, wind back 100 years from 120 years from today. And we get to the Jewish immigrants who came over from the 1880s onwards. They spoke Yiddish. Your question is whether that Yiddish that was spoken 100 years ago had any effect. Now, what you would suppose, as with the post-war period, that young people of Yiddish-speaking parents would then speak English with a Yiddish accent of some kind. Just thinking about British Asians today in Leicester, for instance, there's an Asian accent of Leicester or Bradford and London as well. Surely there must have been a Yiddish accent 100-something years ago. There probably was, but it's come down to us in a very indirect way. We have a pair of recordings of elderly women recorded in the early 1950s as part of a project on the pronunciation of Cockney. Now, these two women were born in Bethnal Green. One of them in particular had really quite strong Jewish connections. She wasn't Jewish herself, but she spent a lot of time with Jews. She worked for them. She was one of the people who lit their fires on Saturdays. So she had very intimate relations with them and knew them very well.
But I get along with them all right, all my life. Mm-hmm. I suppose it's living down here in Brick Lane. Mm-hmm. When I was a little, about 10, mm-hmm. we used to go there and light fires.
Yes, oh,
on a Saturday. We light the fire.
Oh, of course, they can't do it.
No.
And in the interview that was recorded in the early 50s, she talks about crane.
Now we can do osla dish. You ever heard of osla dish? And beetroot?
Yes, also
crane we call it. Mixed together.
Horseradish and what mixed together?
Beetroot.
Mm. Oh, I haven't tried that.
I'll show you a jar of it.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose you haven't seen it.
No, I haven't, sir.
Mm-hmm. Open it, go on. Smell it.
Yes.
It's very hot. They call it crane. Jews call this crane.
Yes.
And she talks about some of the people that she knew being very frum, giving it something like a Yiddish pronunciation.
They call them frum.
Uh-huh.
A good Yiddish person is from.
So she knows some of the words. The other thing is that people who listen to her today think, oh, what kind of an accent is that? It's not just Cockney. There's some other accent there. So we've speculated that maybe this is the remains of a Jewish accent spoken in Bethnal Green round about the year 1900, 1890, when she was growing up. That's not unreasonable because the Jews in that area were in a majority in many of the streets there. And so people like her, who are not Jews, they would have partly acquired their English from other young people who were Jewish. I can mention, though, one pronunciation feature that is often thought of as being Jewish, Yiddish in origin, in London, and that is the pronunciation of the R sound of English. So round, I would say round. There are many people in England who say something like round.
What it means to be Jewish to me is that I was born Jewish, and that probably if anyone says, who's your ancestors, I could turn around and say Moses, and that's the only one I know about, you know.
If you listen to interviews with Lionel Bart from the 1960s, so the composer, musicals producer, whose origins actually are exactly from this Jewish community, he says round as a sort of a R sound for a R.
But I'm not religious, you see. I had to be till I was 13 when I got bar mitzvahed or confirmed. And I had to learn all that ancient Hebrew and all that music.
And a number of people have speculated that this actually comes from the Jewish population of London, this R, which actually is quite widespread today.
My father's brother, they came from Poland as young men, married here, Jewish woman. They were all very former, lived in the East then. And I had a brother and sister. My sister lived in the East then, old Montagu Street.
And what about the words that have survived from that period of immigration, the Yiddish words that we still use in English, modern English today?
Now, I can remember growing up in, well, out of London towards the West, words like nosh, meaning food, and kosher, meaning correct, good in some way. These were certainly words that were in use at my school. And also within my family, my father grew up in Golders Green, which is a Jewish area. He was not Jewish, but he had a lot of friends who were Jewish. And so he used some of these words as well.
Paul Kurzweil. Vivi, I was so intrigued by the way that immigrant influences have been picked up by Londoners who don't themselves have an immigrant heritage, including Paul himself. What do you think about that?
Well, when it comes to Yiddish, it doesn't surprise me at all because there was always lots of mixing between Jews and non-Jews in the East End, like in the markets and the shops and the workshops, and later in the London suburbs.
And we were talking about this together, the way that words become part of your shared family or community vocabulary, and you don't even know really where they've come from. And someone we know came to mind.
Oh, yes, our colleague, Katie.
Yes, Katie's family has deep East End roots, and her family vocabulary is full of Yiddish words and phrases.
They're not words you think of as foreign. Well, I don't think of them as foreign words. You just think of them as words. When does a word stop being Yiddish? You just throw it in as a different word. I think that a lot of the people that I knew and grew up with, the world I grew up in, they like words. And they're clever. And I think it's that kind of interest in words and use in words. Like Zeigesund, you'd say to somebody about health. I would have heard it as a comment that older people said. So it would have been things that I heard them say as a little extra flourish rather than in the middle of something, you know, like a wish or a little, like you throw a kiss or something. It's that kind of idea, I think. Geburtstag is what I've heard for birthday, but I don't know, that might be German. I don't know. I mean, chutzpah, obviously. Who doesn't know that? It means you've got nerve, you've got front, you know. It's cheeky, it's smart. Right. Mensch, obviously, everybody knows that.
What about mensch? What does that mean?
A mensch, it would be, you know, a decent person, I think. Schmooze, who doesn't know that? It's sort of chatting somebody up, like a little bit schmoozing, not chat them up in a sexual way, but, you know. I mean, to me, I suppose it could be a bit smarmy, or it could also be just warming somebody up nicely.
Were these words that you only knew because of your family?
My grandfather was very eloquent. He wasn't highly educated or anything, but he was very clever and very eloquent, and he knew a lot of... He'd mixed, I mean, they all did. All my aunts and uncles, they grew up with, you couldn't not know Jewish people. So they did, and they talked to each other. And so that's how language is worked, you know.